Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, your host for this weekend's edition. What we're going to do is focus a lot on some of the market moves in the first two segments. We're going to talk about the volatility in a lot of the commodities sectors. There are at least a couple of the key ones that a lot of our listeners follow. Also talk about some of the markets and the more concentration of moves that we have seen. And then in the back half of the show, move into the energy sector. Just as a reminder, please go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates that we publish throughout the week. I know it feels like we're almost in a summer market here with markets slowing and some volume declining, but hey, there's still a lot to talk about, especially on the company front. Let's get this show underway as I am kicking off the show with Dana Lyons, fund manager and editor of the Lyons Share Pro website, which I will share a link to within the show notes. Dana, as we've talked throughout the last well over a year now, is that seems like there's a lot of opportunities in these markets. And just recently, some of the commodities have gotten moving, but then also been extremely volatile. I want to start off with silver here, where silver made a pretty important break above $30 an ounce. That break happened in mid-May. And ever since then, boy, oh boy, it's been volatile. You look at just day-to-day price action, silver's moving sometimes over a dollar a day, which is multiple percent, 3%, 4%, even 5% on a day-to-day basis. But in the last few weeks, it hasn't really gone anywhere. So Dana, let's dive into the silver chart. What are you seeing in terms of this volatility?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. I think it's tracking exactly along the themes, the message we talked about last time I was on, which is the substantial rally we saw in the precious metals complex up into those May peaks just increased the implied volatility in this market in that complex. So that just means expect more volatility, expect bigger swings, expect wider ranges from an absolute standpoint. But if you zoom out, given the extent and the significance of the rally we did see preceding, most of these large moves, what seems like a large move on a daily basis or over the last couple of weeks, is it comes down to really just a mere retracement of the rally that we saw either off of the early year lows or the lows from a couple of years ago. We're just seeing basically a third, maybe if you're talking about silver, maybe 33% retracement from the lows in February. So it's nothing to get, as far as we're concerned, nothing to get too worked up about yet. If you zoom out, that breakout that you mentioned was key. We're now seeing higher highs, higher lows across the board in the precious metals complex, where whether it's the metals or the miners themselves. So from a kind of a 30,000 foot standpoint, we're seeing higher highs and higher lows, which obviously equates to an uptrend. So I'm not too concerned about the pullbacks or even the extent of the pullbacks right now, again, because they pretty much just equate to insignificant levels of retracements of the prior rally. So if we saw the entire rally retrace, for example, maybe I'd be a little bit more concerned. But at this point, especially given, like you mentioned, the several years worth of prior peaks that we did break above, whether it's silver or gold or copper, that's a substantial breakout. Until that breakout level given up, then we got to assume that the trend is up and we'll be looking for areas to or levels to buy.
Okay, so overall, still very constructive on silver. What would a level, if it dropped to on the downside, then change that outlook? What would make you concerned if it were to move down lower?
Well, we trade the SLV, the CF. I'd love for SLV to hold the 25 level, which was pretty key going back about 4 years. But even down, it's trading right now around 28. Even if it dropped down to 22, 23, it doesn't negate the uptrend. It obviously, as someone with a long position in the metals and the miners, it's always a sign of a stronger bull market when it doesn't retrace that much and finds buyers at a higher level. But as far as our view goes, from a longer term perspective, we're still very bullish on the complex, and it would take quite a bit of deterioration for us to change that overall long term thesis. Doesn't mean right now we're in kind of a consolidation period after the huge rally. Doesn't mean that we don't trade the range right now while we're consolidating. We'll add a little bit in the pullback and try to lock in some gains into a bounce on a more micro level. But we'll hold a more substantial allocation to precious metals until the uptrend is negated. And like I mentioned, it's got a ways to go to the downside for that to happen.
So, Dan, I find it very interesting to talk about the metals with you because you're very much a generalist. So you're not all in to any sector. But that being said, you're also not going to stick out any sector if it's not performing for you. In terms of something like silver, even precious metals, what would it take for you to allocate more money towards the complex?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, we're not beholden to anything except for objectivity and quantitative data. Whatever the data is doing is what dictates our investment moves. So we could have the best thesis in the world on what fundamentally should happen, and it doesn't mean it's going to happen, or it might happen, but maybe 10 years down the road, which does us no good. It does our clients no good. So we're going to stick with the data and what the charts are doing. So that's what basically our game plan has been and will continue to be. If we're wrong, which happens, then we're not afraid to change course. So right now, we're still, like I mentioned, the metals and the miners right now are in uptrends, and we'll look to continue to get longer in those areas into pullbacks. You asked what would take to get more aggressive, and it's just better entry points. We're still in an uptrend. What we like to do is concentrate our portfolio, our money in those areas of the market that are working best, but we like to do it into pullbacks, into good risk reward entry points. So the rally that we saw into May in the metals and the miners, we're not buying into that. We might be taking some profits into that. We'll wait for retracement like we're seeing now in order to recommit some more capital. So we'll get aggressive, but usually into weakness, and are always into areas of the market that are in uptrends and hopefully showing relative strength.
To quickly look at the SIL chart, the Global X Silver Miners ETF. Now, I know this isn't just silver miners. There's a lot of gold companies in there, big mix of companies, but it's one of the larger silver mining equity ETFs. What are you seeing in this chart? Also volatile, also nicely off of its lows, but also a long way to go to some of those highs from back in 2020 and 2021. What's this chart showing you? Also considering volume has really picked up in the last couple months.
Yeah, the volume has been great on the moves off of the lows, which is good to see. I think we talked about one of the recent shows that generally you see higher volume. More so on down moves, you see higher volume because it's more emotional than the up moves. Typically, you see volume spike on up moves when you're near the peak after a drawn out long-term bull market, like you might be seeing here in technology or semiconductors, that type of thing that's been rallying for a while. And now you have all the Johnny come latelys into the party. So that's more of topping type of a volume signal. As far as the precious metal, which saw a lot of volume right off the lows into the rally, that's more of a bullish sign. That's more of an ignition type signal or escape velocity type signal where you get that high volume just at the beginning of a move. So to us, that's certainly a bullish sign. And SIL, whether it's SIL or the junior silver miner, very similar to silver itself. It's been going sideways. The miners really in a downtrend more so than even silver over the last 4 years or so. But in that recent rally since the beginning of the year, did finally hit some higher highs, which is the first time in a while there. So broke kind of that downtrend, consolidating that rally right now. We'll look for it to kind of flush some people out here, but very much still in an uptrend, very much still in the posture where we want to be buying dips and ahead of what should be you know, the next leg higher in this possibly very early on uptrend.
Okay, how about copper then? Because boy, oh boy, copper went on quite the run throughout the first half of May when it broke over $5 and then almost immediately reversed back down. And as good as May was looking for copper, it pretty much ended the month flat and has had a little bit of a downward bias since. But to kind of some of your points earlier, a key breakout above $5 last month. What do you see in the copper chart?
Yeah, again, very similar to silver. I think historically you could look at silver as kind of a higher beta play on gold. And then just recently, especially, copper has been really a higher beta play on silver. So going in the same direction, just experiencing a little bit more volatility or a little higher beta in copper than silver, but very similar charts. Copper actually over the last couple of years has held up a little bit better than silver, but experienced a similar breakout over the last couple months. Now pulling back, it's been a rough month or a couple weeks, obviously, for copper. It's really gotten hammered. But again, considering the extent of the rally we saw off of either the early year lows or the lows from last fall, last October. So we're seeing like maybe a 33 to 50% retracement on there and probably coming into an area which is very attractive to us in terms of adding further exposure to it.
Okay. Dana, let's now move over to the markets and really address the elephant in the room here being NVIDIA, over a $3 trillion market cap worth more than Microsoft. A lot of the bears want to point to the lack of breadth here, more the concentration of just a few stocks leading these markets higher, which in all fairness, we have seen a few times over the last couple years. What are your comments to all the bears out there that say, there's no breadth or there's a lack of breadth and NVIDIA, it's gotten too hot. This is dangerous.
Yeah, well, speaking to NVIDIA and the semiconductor space, these types of blow-offs or bubbles, if you want to call them, they're going to cost a lot of people a lot of money, probably most of their money that they put into it at this point. With that being said, bubbles are great until they pop. So we're long semiconductors, we'll continue to be long semiconductors until the bubble does pop or the data suggests we get out. That doesn't mean we don't manage risk along the way. So in something like SMH, for example, a semiconductor ETF getting close to a key Fibonacci extension level around 282, we'll take some profits there and we'll continue to take some profits along the way. We don't have to capture every last drop of the rally. It's just like if you're going to be buying the dips, you have to book some into key levels on the upside, key extension levels. So that would be one area in SMH. NVIDIA obviously is a huge part of that ETF and a huge part of the major averages, the S&P, the NASDAQ 100. So obviously as that goes, it's going to have a huge influence on what those major averages does. So we'll keep a close eye on that. We don't typically track individual stocks as much, but considering the extent of the composition of those averages that it holds, then it's obviously, it pays to keep close attention to it. So we, like you mentioned, we've seen periods in the past where we've seen a very small concentration of top stocks, or maybe I should say a high concentration of indices in very few stocks. We saw that at the dot-com bubble. We saw it to some extent back in 07. I've certainly seen it now. So that is a sign of participation or declining breadth or internals in the market, which is not ideal. Again, it can last for a long time. The divergence in breadth back in 98, we saw the major market, overall market pop in 98, and then the averages continued to last, or the rally and the major averages continued to go till 2000. So it doesn't typically last that long, but it can. As far as a divergence now, we've seen confirmations for the most part in breadth to all the S&P 500 highs until just this month. Even in May, we saw those highs, those new highs confirmed by breast stats like the NYSE advanced decline line. We're not seeing that now in this latest pop to new highs, which certainly for us is a concern. Also seeing an expansion in new lows versus new highs, even as the major averages hit all-time highs. That is a major concern now. So probably the last time we talked, or maybe a couple times ago, we were not that concerned. We're starting to see more and more troubling signs from a breadth perspective pop up. So it doesn't mean you jump all out. Doesn't mean you get aggressively short, but it is a kind of a leading indicator, a heads up, an early warning sign that this rally in things like NVIDIA or the major large cap averages, once those do give way, there's not that foundation underneath as in terms of a strong internal, strong level of participation, the broader market that can prop it up. So again, not every data point is a signal and eventually will be. The timing is sometimes tricky, but we are seeing more warning signs now than we had in those earlier rallies this year, the ones into March, April, and then the new highs in May, which were confirmed. We're not seeing that confirmation now. So it's definitely got our antennas up.
Okay. Hey, fair enough. Look, the S&P has been up, I think, 8 out of the last 9 weeks, if you include this last week. So yeah, some sort of a pullback, but that lack of breadth, again, as you said, that's a bit concerning now. And that means a lot coming from you and your models. Where are some sectors out there that you still see strength in? We already talked about the commodities. Commodities were doing well, but any other pockets of markets that your models are constructive on?
Obviously technology, but we've covered that. That's very extended. It's hard to jump into it here. We'll ride it out with the positions that we have because they're still, you know, from a chart perspective, still very constructive. Industrials are, and financials trying to hang in there. Energy is, if you're looking for something to buy now that's not extended, but still in a nice uptrend, energy is giving you an opportunity right now. But maybe a theme that has been emerging of late is kind of the defensive sectors that have really improved over this quarter, whether it's healthcare, utilities, consumer staples, which have really done an about face in terms of relative strength. They were really beaten down and not keeping up with the market. It's been a reversal over this quarter. They have seen some money rotate into them and consolidating right now, but overall look poised to continue to the upside, which if some of the more risk on sectors continue to fall by the wayside and these defensive sectors continue higher again, that's not a sign to jump ship, but it is another one of those early warning signs of a major top, kind of like some of these early breadth divergences. So something to keep an eye on, and another sign of maybe a late stage rally that we'll continue to monitor. But as long as they hold up, if you're looking for a spot to allocate some equity money to, some of those defensive sectors are starting to behave a little bit better and certainly are not too extended.
All right, Dana, thank you so much, as always, for talking about some of these markets. We didn't go to so many markets this time because I really did want to spend more time on some of the individual charts, especially in the commodities, to make sense of some of this recent volatility, which sounds like you're still very encouraged on a number of the commodity sectors and something to watch out for these markets. A correction should be coming, could be coming. We'll see how far these markets drop and what kind of buying opportunity it lends itself to. Dana, thank you as always for your time. Again, Dana is the editor of the Lion Share Pro website, which I will share a link to in the show notes. Dana, have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Corey. You do the same.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.